So welcome everybody. Now let's try again, and we're going to start off with this crazy situation where we're going to talk about Zoom. And of course everybody here is on Zoom, so you don't really need to know these things, but there was a question that came in a couple of weeks ago, and Micheline couldn't access the meeting on Zoom, and Zoom was telling her there was an update, but she didn't know how to get to it. So as everybody probably knows, there are actually two ways to connect. You can use a web browser, or Zoom also has a desktop client. So you can download and install the app, and then you can use that to do the connection. And that gives you actually more flexibility in how you do things. Basically what you need, of course, is the link. So you get this link, this tiny URL link to the meeting, and that's good for both the Q&A session and the regular monthly meetings. And we send that out every week before the actual session. And if you click on it, then the tiny URL, you insert that into the address bar of your browser, for example. And when you hit return, then it actually resolves into a much longer URL, which is on the Zoom website, and then embeds the meeting ID number and also the encrypted password. So, as you know, the password is actually OPCUG in lowercase, but in the Zoom link, it's actually encrypted into that long string of characters there. Now, I never use the browser, so my understanding is that when you hit that link, then you will come to this screen, and it will invite you to launch the meeting. It says, if you don't see your meeting, then hit this button to launch the meeting. So I imagine when you hit the URL, you should be linked directly to the meeting. If you're not, then you can try this blue button, launch the meeting. And if that doesn't work, then it says join from your browser and you can try that link. And so those are the kind of things you do to get in over a web browser. But as I said, you can actually download the Zoom app. So if you're not doing this, it's actually very useful. You basically download this app and then install it. And then when you run the app, you actually come to this screen. And so this is the Zoom client, the desktop client. And the gear wheel there is the icon to get to the settings. And this is where all the power of the situation is. If you click on settings, then you see you get a whole raft of things that you can adjust and run the system the way that you would like to. So a whole bunch of things you can check. And there are also ways that you can play with the audio and video. And if you've noticed, some people are using virtual backgrounds. And so, for example, if you go to the background and effects tab here, some of these backgrounds are available built into the web browser. But what I'm showing you is a whole bunch of images which I've uploaded into my Zoom client. And I can select between them and choose one I want. Except now I'm logged on as Chris, and he doesn't seem to have this thing activated, so I'm not using a virtual background tonight. However, to get back to the case in point, when you've got the URL, you need to hit the join button here to get to our meeting, and then that will pop up this first screen here where it's asking you for the meeting ID, which comes from that email that you get. You can include some text here to say who you are. And then when you say join, then you get this second screen, and now it's asking you for the passcode. And the passcode, of course, is OPCUG, and that has to be in lowercase to get you into the meeting. Now you just hit the blue button here or join meeting. So the question, getting back to the question, how do you do the updates of the Zoom client? So if it doesn't tell you as an update, which it usually does and invites you to install it, you open the Zoom client on your desktop, and then you click on the profile icon. The profile icon is this thing in the top right-hand corner of the Zoom window. And when you go there, you can select check for updates. And then if there is one available, it will download and install automatically, or it will download automatically, and then you can just click update to install. It will then install and automatically reboot. So the process basically is you click on the on your profile link here, and then when in the menu, the drop-down menu here.
Alan, yes, we can't see any of your sides. Your slides. We're stuck on the background and effects slide.
Oh, how wonderful. Why is it doing this to me? So my second monitor seems to be frozen for some reason.
Alan, is your last name Murphy?
No, I guess. Right, let me just get out of here again. I can never find my mouse.
I have an extra screen I can give you.
Yeah, right. Well, Bob may have to run this meeting in a minute. Let me just see if I can find slide 14.
We got the blue screen.
Right, so now we're there, right? So now you should be seeing the join the meeting slide.
Now we see a Zoom slide. The Zoom with the time, 1:59 p.m.
That's the one. Okay, right. So
good.
We're good to go. All right, let's try again. All right, so once everything's set up, then you can say join the meeting. And then you have to enter the meeting ID in the top box on the left-hand side. You can include your name in the bottom box on the left-hand side, and then you say join. And that takes you to the password screen. So you enter the password, which is OPC Eugene lowercase, and then that will get you to go back again. Down. All right, so... So as I was saying, what you to install updates, that was the real question. So you need to open the client, click on your profile icon, and then go through these steps. So here's the profile icon. Mine's this little penguin guy. So then you go to the drop-down menu and select check for updates. And then when you do that, you will get some kind of screen that says, yes, there's an update available, if there is one. And it will tell you all about it, and then you can say, update my Zoom client, please. And Bob Harris had an interesting add-on in the members forum where he indicated to Micheline that one of the things you can do is to actually test the Zoom connection by going to zoom.us/test, which is a Zoom web page that lets you test your ability to connect to a Zoom meeting. So those are all the things that I know about running Zoom meetings in browsers. I don't know very much about browsers, but I use the client quite a bit, and I find it works very well. So if that appeals to you, by all means, go ahead and download it and see how you like it. Okay. That's it for that. So now I can turn it over to Tom, who I think is unmuted, and he'll tell us all about Dustin Abbott.
Bob, it's up to you.
What's wrong?
For Tom?
You not got that slide, Tom?
What? I don't have a... Oh! This is my slide. I'm sorry. It's my mistake. This is the Murphy edition of OPCUG. Okay, this is a guy who's a professional photographer in Pembroke, which isn't so far away. And he does a lot of tests of different things. And he does, he reviews mostly Canon compatible stuff, but other, electronics and other stuff too. He has frequent blog entries. So, I recommend him, especially if you have a Canon camera.
Okay. Thank you, Tom. And, come again. Bob, can you run the slideshow? Because my thing will not change the slides properly. I do not
certainly.
Know
what number are we on now, Alan? What number are we on?
22.
Okay, very good. I'll set it to 22, and I hope we get this right up here.
You'll need to, I'll stop my share. You need to share your screen.
Okay, and 22. Very good. I'm going to, and I'm going to go here. I'm going to.
I see it. I see your mouse moving around somewhere. Now, Windows screen.
Yep, I got to share it first. So I'm going to replace current screen. We're going to go to my ghost monitor. Thank you, Tom. We'll go to here, and we're going to go to there, and hopefully this will work right now. What do you see now?
The title slide.
Okay, we'll scoot down to...
So if you hit 22 and return, you should get to the right slide.
Oh, move the wrong one.
There we go.
Sorry.
Oh, one more.
Sorry.
There we are.
There we are. We got it now. We're moving now. I'm sorry.
All right. So if you want to go one more slide.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so this is Dave's garage. This is Dave Plummer, the guy that used to work for Microsoft as a software engineer. And if you've ever wondered what happens when you type a URL into the address bar, in almost no time it loads a web page. It takes absolutely no time at all to load the web page from the URL, but it takes. It takes Dave about 15 minutes or so to explain how it works. But it's really quite interesting. He goes through all the steps as to what actually happens in the chain of things that go from your computer and your address bar to the server that you're trying to connect to actually serving you up the web page and having it rendered on your computer. So it's a fascinating story, and it's probably worth 15 or 16 minutes of your life to check that out and see how it works. Okay, next slide, please, Bob.
Very good.
Okay, so the next thing I've got is the Trading Up to Linux series, and we're up to the point where we've installed Linux now on the desktop. We can boot into it directly and have a working system on our computer, but we've just got that kind of boring black screen, and what we want to do is to actually customize it, do some configuration, and get the system working the way that we want to. Okay, next slide, please, Bob. But as I said previously, we were talking about updates, and I'd said that the updates in Linux are very frequent. But usually they're not very many of them, and they're pretty small in terms of the download size. And because of that, updating is actually quite quick. Next slide, please. And here's an example of an update process that happened just a couple of days ago. You see that there are actually two updates available and 3 megabytes of data to be downloaded, which, of course, comes down pretty quickly. And next. And it actually took 17 seconds for the files to be downloaded, installed, and Linux to tell me that the system is up to date. So whenever there are updates, I generally just do them right then and there because it's, you know, usually less than a minute to get things working properly. Next, please. Okay, so here's that generic screen when we've done our first install. And we can use the start menu to do things, but I like to use a desktop which is more like a Windows desktop, and Linux has the capability to do that. So next, please. So let's do some customization of this plain desktop. Next. So the bottom left-hand corner there is the start menu. And when we do that, we see the various categories of software that are installed on the system. So we can choose something. Next. So let's choose the Office category. And you'll see that we've got LibreOffice Writer. And if we clicked on that, then we would load Writer. But then to do that, we'd have to go to the menu all the time. But suppose we do a right click on the item, because that will load a context menu as it would do in Windows. Next. And you'll notice here that one of the options in that context menu is add this program to the desktop. So this is essentially like send to or create a shortcut on the Windows desktop. We're basically creating a shortcut on the Linux desktop. Next. Yes, okay, so we're going to select that. And I've actually selected that one. I've done the same thing for LibreOffice Calc. And it's placed them on the desktop. But you notice it's put them kind of in a line. And that's because Linux by default is going to arrange the icons the way that it wants to. Next. But we can fix that by right-clicking, again, to get a context menu anywhere on the desktop that's open. And when we do that, we get this drop-down menu here, and the bottom one there is Customize. So let's select Customize. And when we do that, we get these various options for the layout. And you notice here one of them is called Auto Arrange. And what I want to do is toggle that off, because by default it was toggled on. So I'm going to turn off Auto Arrange so that I get the ability to place the icons exactly where I want them to be on the desktop. Next. So I've done that, and now I've just dragged and dropped the two icons from the top left-hand corner of the screen, and I put them basically in the bottom left-hand corner of the screen, which is where I like to see them. Next. Now, the other thing we can do is, let's say we want to use the Thunderbird mail client. Again, I use that a lot. And I really use that a lot. So what I want to do with that one is right-click on it. Next.
Did I get a goal?
One too many, I think.
Sorry.
That one? Yeah, right-click on it. And this time, instead of adding it to the desktop, I want to add the icon to the panel. And the panel, if you remember, is the Linux equivalent of the Windows taskbar. So I'm going to add the icon for Thunderbird Mail to the panel at the bottom of the screen. Next. So now you can see I've added Thunderbird's icon to the bottom of the screen. So that gives you the option now of creating icons on the desktop or icons on the taskbar. And the nice thing about icons on the taskbar or the panel is that you only need a single click to launch Thunderbird. Whereas the icon on the desktop is like Windows, you need to double click on it. Let's see what we get next. Okay, so the other thing we can do is to look at the favorites down the left-hand side of the start menu. And you notice we've got one here that's called System Settings. So let's click on that one and bring up the System Settings options. Next. And what I'm interested in is to alter things on the desktop. So let's click on this desktop icon and bring up the settings for the desktop. And now you can see that there's some other desktop icons which by default are hidden. So I want to turn on the computer icon, the home icon, and the trash icon. So I'm just going to slide all those toggles to the right and enable those three icons. Next. So now you can see what I've got is I've got right at the top, I've got the icon for a flash drive, or actually it's an SD card, which is always plugged into my computer. I've just enabled the icon for computer, and that's essentially it's essentially like File Explorer, so it's a file manager, but it's for the whole of the Linux file system. So you get right down to the root level of the directory, and you can see all of the available folders at the root level of the system. Remember, Linux doesn't really have drives. It has different mount points, and they're all part of one big file system. The second one down, that yellow icon, is the home folder, and that's essentially like the Windows user directory for your particular username. So it's kind of got the folders like documents and pictures and videos and that kind of stuff, which are associated with your user profile. And then the final icon there is data disk, which is my dedicated data drive. So I can access all my data files by getting to those. And then the other icon I enabled was the trash icon right at the top there. So that's like the recycle bin. So when you delete a file, if you delete the file, then it gets sent to trash, and then you can see an icon. The icon changes, and you can see the trash bin filling up. So then you can double click on trash, open it up, and tell it to empty the trash and to make some space. Or if you delete it by something by mistake, then you can actually recover it from the trash bin, just like you can with Windows Recycle Bin. Okay, next, please, Bob. Right, so the final thing I think we want to look at tonight is a little bit more complicated. And one of the things about Linux is if you don't know how to do something, you ask Mr. Google, and he will tell you how to do it almost invariably. And I keep this this maintenance blog, which kind of reminds me how to do various things. And one of the things is changing the date and time format on the panel, which is in the bottom right-hand corner. And this thing tells you exactly how to do that. Next. So here's the default entry when you've installed Linux on your system. You basically just get the time, the hours and the minutes. I actually like to see the day. Being retired, I never know what day it is, so it's nice to see the day. So if I right-click on the time, I'll get a context menu. So here it pops up. So I choose Configure. So let's look at that. Next, please, Bob. So one of the things you get here is a toggle to use a custom date format. So you can toggle that on, and then in that box, you can enter essentially a string of characters which defines how the date and time are going to be displayed on the screen. Now, none of that is intuitive, but that link I had earlier on, the guy's posting on the web, tells you exactly what all these different parameters are and what they do. And so I've chosen to have percentage A, which is the abbreviated day, so it shows up as Sun for Sunday. I have percentage E, which is the day of the month, 1 to 31. So, for example, today is 20. Percentage B is the abbreviated month, so you get Jan for January. And then percentage hours, colon, percentage minutes still retains that hours and minutes field in the 24-hour clock. So once you hit return, save those settings, next, and you find that indeed you have the abbreviated day and then the date in terms of the day and the month and the time in terms of the hours and the seconds. So that's a little bit more complicated way of configuring stuff. But again, if that's what you want to do, all you have to do is ask Mr. Google and he'll generally tell you how to do it. Next. Okay. Well, that's all I wanted to talk about tonight in terms of configuring the desktop. I'll have some more on that later in this series. Okay, so let's move along, and I think it's up to Uncle Bob to talk about something else.
Okay, thank you, Alan. I have a little share here for you tonight. As it says here, I like to research things. Sometimes I research a new skill, or I research things I'm going to do, or maybe I research things I'm going to purchase. But my research always ends up like this. And before you know it, all my great ideas are buried in a ton of files, folders, papers, and sticky notes. But now I have no worries. I have a personal assistant who organizes all my notes instantly and sorts everything into clear and concise, easy to find, actionable information. Welcome, I'm Bob Harris, and I'm here to show you and share with you Notebook LM. I'm sure many of you have seen this in the news recently. I know I did, but I had no idea what it was for. Here are a few examples I saw in the headlines in early October, October 3rd, Tom's Guide. Notebook LM is the most exciting tech to arrive since ChatGPT. Washington Post, Google's new AI will turn anything into a podcast. And thank you to Alan. On November 14th, PC World says Notebook LM will help you ace your exams. Well, after seeing so much praise on this thing, I know I did a drone exam for 90 minutes. Do another one again soon. So I wondered, how much does this notebook thing cost? Let's get started. Here's our agenda. First, we'll do a quick overview. Then we'll explore why this is really worth using. Then we'll see how to use it. And finally, we'll check out a few helpful features and tips. So, Notebook LM is your personal research assistant. It streamlines your research, your learning, or simply just gathering information on any topic, whatever you're working on. And then it'll help you make smarter decisions. You can literally throw almost anything at it. Documents, web pages, YouTube videos, PDF files, just dump it in there. Now, that's what I did before, but I can never find it again. This is way different, and it's amazing. So it'll make you more productive. It'll instantly upgrade your capacity to learn more complex things very quickly. It'll help you be creative and make your own original ideas so you can make smarter decisions. And this is actually, think about this, this is huge. I've been around for a few years. I've never found a new way of learning, and this is one, and it really works. So you're going to ask about privacy. Well, I'm certainly not an expert, and I'm not suggesting you load it up with banking information, but Notebook LM stands out in terms of privacy and security as compared to other AI tools, even email. Now, I'll let you do your own research on this, but I'll show you one more slide on privacy. This article from a journalist from Washington writes that it offers better privacy than most online services. And this is in line with the union in Europe. However, you should always think twice before you load up and share anything that is sensitive. Any sensitive information, use caution with that. But I say it's safer than email, but I'm no expert. It's a good thing Chris is not here to counterbalance this. So, its core purpose is to manage information. It doesn't matter how small, how large, or how complex it is. You can throw all this stuff right into Notebook LM. It will spark your innovation and make you have smarter decisions here. Now, I'm certainly not going to list all the possible uses, but I do want you to understand it's the perfect tool for anything that matters to you. So whatever you're doing, whatever you're working on, whatever you want to save, don't put it in your hard drive. Try it on this gizmo here. Getting started. So signing up for Notebook LM is super easy. If you haven't got a Google account, you really need to get one. We just go to notebooklm.google. Use your Google account. We arrive here at the landing page. Think smarter, not harder. And yes, this is the ultimate tool for understanding the information that matters most to you. To get started, we're going to click on Try Notebook, the little red circle, little black button there. And lo and behold, here we are. Welcome to Notebook LM. We are ready to create our first notebook. As we get started, we can see a little hard to read those things maybe, but we can see some brief instructions here. We can upload our documents to Notebook LM, and it will answer detailed questions and provide key insights. It'll instantly convert complex materials into simple, easy-to-understand formats like three frequently asked questions and briefings. We're going to click on the blue button at the bottom that says Create. Congratulations, we just created our first notebook. Now, let's put something in it. The middle area is where we upload our documents, PDFs, Word files, web pages, and YouTube videos. We can just drop and drag them in here using our mouse, or we can go to the bottom of the page and click on where it says documents, slides, website, YouTube, copied text. Each one of those will open a window so you can put in your file. So let's try the website one. Try the website. We'll click on the website button at the bottom, and here we are. There's the website little page here. Opens right up, and here we are ready to copy and paste the URL from our website right into there, and it really is that simple. We can also, in your notebook, there'll be a plus sign. We can use the plus sign or the plus symbol to add new items. Hit that button, you can add new items. Now, we need to give our notebook a name. Untitled is not a good word to have, so let's rename it to SSD Drives. I'm currently shopping for a new solid-state drive, and I'd really like a bit of help to compare all the best deals. There's so much to consider, the sizes, the speeds, the prices, and the interface, and more than that. This will help me organize and analyze all the options. Now, I know Tim is, it says here Tim's in Florida, but geez, he may not be. Tim, if you're in Florida, you can use your notebook for sunscreen types, you can compare the SPF numbers and the water resistance. But welcome back, Tim. So, getting back to solid-state drives, I've already copied and pasted about 8 links to different website pages, and you see them here in the left-hand side. I've taken these 8 links for solid-state drives from suppliers like the Trailing Edge, Canada Computers, and other retailers. Now, we can dive into the data and start comparing. So we might ask a question, which drive has the best warranty? Now, it would not fit on a page. It wouldn't fit on 4 pages or more here. The data is humongous. It gives you a scoop on all these drives for that. It doesn't matter how many sources we've added in here. It has no problem with the quantities of data. Or we might ask, which drive has the fastest read-write speeds? Remember, all I did was copy and paste the 8 links into my Notebook LM. And there we have it. It has a breakdown on the speeds. It knows all about it. Ask any question you want. But what if you don't know what to ask? You can ask. You can say, what can I ask? It'll give you questions. But really, it does give you a list of suggested questions for the data you already have in your book. It couldn't get any easier than this. And don't forget, these questions are solely based on the data and the from the content we provided. Now, we didn't even ask to see reviews, but it found content but reviews that I didn't even realize I had loaded. And I should add, just like Perplexity AI, everything comes with citations, so you can verify where you got it from. There's no AI possible that does not make mistakes. This is very good. Nothing is perfect. So let's click on the notebook guide in the red circle here, the notebook guide. And I realize this is way too difficult to see. It's all blurry and too big. So let's break this down into chunks. We'll tackle the left side first. So on the left side of the notebook, we see our SSD notebook. And here we have, we can click on these things. We have the frequently asked questions, a study guide. We click on these things. It takes maybe 4, maybe 5 seconds, and it actually generates the data based on the content you have in there right away. It gives you a study guide if you want for general things. I put a table of contents. It had a little segment about understanding solid-state drives. This timeline and briefing, the timeline and briefing are equally impressive, but I'm sure it'll look a whole lot better when it's focused on the information that's relevant to your topic. Now, the notebook guide on the right side. On the right side of the notebook guide, this is where the real magic happens. We have a deep dive conversation. We can click generate or customize. And this will generate for us a podcast about all the data we have loaded. I've done five, maybe even more than that. And you folks are handicapped. You probably don't wear hearing aids. So I take the dogs for a walk, and I can play. What I do is take that podcast, pop it into my Google Drive, and then open that on my phone, take the dogs for a walk, and hear my podcast on my hearing aids. Now, you can get earbuds. I have those too for like $20. Hearing aids are better, but anyway, you need some time to listen to these things. So I can't say it enough. When you read the data and you see the data and then you hear the same stuff, there's two people talking about it going on, it really soaks in for me anyway. So anyway, after you get this podcast generated, this one here was 14 minutes long. It's a man and a lady talking, and they do it in casual, down-to-earth language. The three little dots, we just click on that and download our SSD drives WAV file. It was 14 minutes long. And I should add, you're probably asking now, wait, is all this free? And I'm telling you, yes, all of this content is absolutely free. However, like most of these AI things, they're putting millions and billions of dollars in this stuff. The real stuff is that Notebook LM is still in the early testing phase. They currently are not charging for access at this time. So it might cost you money later. Get in there and try it now. So I won't go into too much detail, but I'll show you my page and my Notebook LM page. And I have more than these. I have one on the top left for gasoline and small engine, ethanol hurts your snow blower gasoline and soaks the water up. And some YouTube videos on that. I took two YouTube videos on a slightly different, on the same topic, and merged them together into a discussion, and that was the dog walk that day. And some of the neighbors around here have permanent outdoor lights or all-year lights. I have two folders on that one, and I certainly wouldn't be able to have anybody install them for me, but I might try and do it myself, maybe not this year. SSD drives, Perplexity, Dieting, and Notebook LM, and I have more of them too. Anyway, these are all, I can call upon these things instantly, and you want to know what the limits of this software is. Well, each notebook, you can contain up to 50 sources. Each source can hold up to 500 words or 200 megabytes. And the maximum file size for any file in your source, that's one of 50, is 200 megabytes times 50 files. That's a lot. Now, notebook limits. I might have about 10 or 12 notebooks. My cap is 100 notebooks. I have 35 languages. Usually one's enough for me. Audio files, MP3, and WAV. And once again, they're not charging for access at this time. Get in there and enjoy it. Later, you may or may not want to pay for it. So, Notebook LM, the ultimate tool for understanding the information that's most important to you. It's built with Gemini, by Gemini, by Google Labs. Think smarter, not harder. And I'll turn it over to the boss. Alan, back to you, please.
Well, actually, Tom is suggesting that this might be good for large government documents, such as the Ottawa Transportation Plan, or also for things like travel books, ebooks.
Absolutely. I'm sure it would be great. Yes. Yeah, it's the diversity is phenomenal. And the YouTube videos, I do watch YouTube. I always sign in. And back to the Christmas lights, I thought I had it all nailed down. And then YouTube gives me another channel, another show, about another type of Christmas light. And look, that's pretty cool. So I dumped that back into the my existing notebook for Christmas lights or all year round permanent lights. And I added that to the conversation. And the data is all in there for pricing. And I can ask it that which lights are best for the lowest temperature, the best fasteners. I couldn't do it myself in the same way. So your topic is what you have to go with, not mine. Because my stuff, you need some context. But think about this stuff with your stuff. Whatever you're doing, this will do it better. And currently it's free. Anyway, that's all I've got to say on that.
Okay, well, I don't know what you found out about solid state drives, but Harvey's saying that he's replacing the 2 terabyte hard drives, the spinning disks, with solid state drives, and he's ordered Western Digital Red SA500 NAS SATA drives, 2.5 inch. So did they come up as the top of the crop?
I don't know for sure, but I must admit that I was looking for a solid state drive this summer, and I did buy it. It's on my desk sitting right here. It's not installed yet. And a 2 terabyte here, SATA 2.5 inch. I shopped that the best I could, but this would have been a far better tool to use to shop it. Well, I did add the trailing edge in there first and Canada Computers.
Yeah, I think this would be a really good this tool for doing things. My son runs a company in San Diego, and he uses ChatGPT, which he pays for. And apparently you can get various engines, and you can pour stuff into them, pour files and so on. What he uses it for is he puts in the contracts that he is has with other companies, and he ask, you know, is there anything strange in here? Are there any clauses that are odd? And I presume other questions as well. But anything where you have a lot of data that you would like to research through. I mean, I'm thinking of the Ottawa Transportation Plan, but there are also a lot of documents that support that or that address bicycles or roads or so on, which you could also pour in there and then ask questions of it. And I think for ebooks, for example, if you're going on a book, you may want to take a look at the various travel ebooks for Japan or other things. And then if you load them all all the ones you get into this up to 50 ebooks, then this would be it doesn't say PDF. It says PDF text, markdown, and audio, so it may not handle ebooks. But then you'd be able to ask questions. Okay, where is this? What is this? I'm interested in looking for this. And that might be very useful whenever you have a whole bunch of stuff and then the files are available to you.
Yeah. It's pretty easy to save your ebook probably as a PDF file. I don't know about that. And I see Eldon has a comment here about Google Drive. This is made by Google. Google Docs and Google Slides are pretty seamless with this. So, yes, you could copy your Google Drive stuff over to this. It would sort it all out. And I even wondered about putting in some fictitious content. I could make a story. Well, I do a local newspaper. Shouldn't say too much about this. For the neighbors here, about someone delivering flyers. It's called the Henry Goulburn News. And I could copy that newspaper into there and make a podcast about that. You could make a podcast. I could tell a story about Tim on here and about going to Florida and put that all into the text. And then they'd have two people on there in the podcast discussing Tim's story. I don't know what would happen. I haven't tried that yet, Tim, so don't worry about me yet. But
Arr.
or you could put all the Hobbit books, all the Lord of the Rings in there, and then you could ask questions of it. And, you know, it could Frodo have chosen another path or other things like this? I mean, your imagination is your limit.
Exactly it. And when you make that podcast, you can tell it to specify on certain areas, because if you do a podcast, it doesn't cover what you want. Like my lights, I wanted more information on the fasteners and the voltages. So I did it again. It's all free. Anyway, sorry to take up too much time, Alan. Sorry.
No, it's good. There are lots of people saying they really enjoyed the topic, and it looks like a really interesting thing to play with. Okay, so go on to the next slide, and we'll just ask if there are any other questions, I think.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah, we're into the last 10 minutes, so if anybody has any questions or comments, I see there's a comment here from Stu early on. Apparently tonight there was a new topic, training a Zoom administrator. I wonder who that was. Yeah, my apologies for the technical issues tonight. I really don't know what happened to PowerPoint. Like, I run the slideshow every week, and it works perfectly. I loaded Chris's pre-meeting deck and tried to run it, and it wasn't running properly. And then when I load my real deck, I'm not getting the presenter view. So somehow, Chris's deck has upset the settings in my PowerPoint, so I'll have to sort that out. Anyway, it worked really well on Bob's machine, so we have a deputy Zoom administrator if we need one. So thanks a lot for that, Bob. That was really good.
Good job, Alan.
Okay, any other questions in the chat, or if you want to open your microphone and talk to us, you can do that too. Okay.
I was just going to say I had a real nice one-on-one with Stefan this week or last week. Very helpful. And so it works well if anybody else wants to try it.
Okay. Thanks very much, Carol. That's actually coming up. So let's go on to the next slide, Bob.
That's positive.
Oh.
Positive feedback.
The next slide, I'm not sure. It is. There you go. So I was going to remind everybody that we have this one-on-one remote assistance program, so you can get the details at the first link there. If you need any help that you think we can, so I'm just trying to paste this in at the same time. If anybody needs any help and you think it's suitable for one-on-one remote assistance, then By all means, send a request, and I'll post that one in the chat too. So you send a request to this email address, and you'll recall that basically we have some volunteers who will review the requests that come in, and then hopefully somebody will try to help. So Carol had a problem where she had a whole bunch of duplicate files and folders because somebody had cloned her old computer or old hard drive, and she needed some help in trying to sort it all out. And that's a classic example where it's really hard to do just over the phone or by email, but if you can see the other person's screen, and even if you can navigate on it, it can really speed things up to get things sorted out. And apparently Stefan did a good job in that respect.
So I will say a life-changing change was that the default for my download was going to a download file. Then I'd have to copy it and put it somewhere else. And he changed it just to download the downloads to the desktop. And I have to deal with it right there. It's beautiful. So I don't have an extra file of downloads. I love it. So that's great.
Well, you don't download too many things and your desktop fills up, I guess.
Yeah, that's right.
Again, if you have anything that you think could benefit from one-on-one remote assistance, we have that service for club members. Next slide, please, Bob.
Good.
So coming up in the future, we have some presentations in conjunction with the library. And Linda and Chris are doing a sterling job. If you go to the link, you'll find all kinds of different presentations. These are just the three of the ones that are coming up in the next little while. And if you need to restore old photographs, this is taking out scratches and things like that. Linda has a presentation. And Chris has got a new presentation, which he's giving at Collingwood on the 25th. And it looks like he's combining a whole bunch of his quick tips that he's been publishing in the newsletter, and he's going to talk about how to basically soup up your computer using these different techniques. And then we've been looking at possibly moving to Linux because we can't upgrade to Windows 11, but the other alternative is just to buy a new computer. So if you're interested in If you're thinking about buying a new computer, then this presentation by Chris basically covers all the bases. He talks about CPUs and memory and peripherals and all kinds of different computers, laptops and desktops and tablets and so on and so forth. So it's really a very comprehensive presentation on the different kind of PCs that are out there, including the brand new Copilot PCs, the AI PCs, which are actually using ARM chips. So they're moving away from Intel and AMD and using ARM chips, which you normally see in smartphones and tablets. They're actually using those in PCs, and that's fine as far as it goes, but Chris has a few caveats on how they work on regular computing machines. Next, Bob, please.
Very good.
This is the last slide. Just to remind you that next week, hopefully we have a regular Q&A session where Chris will be in charge and I just have to push a few buttons. So on November the 27th is next Wednesday. If you have more questions or if you have topics that you'd like to share, or you've got loony links like the one that Tom provided, send some information to us at suggestionbox@opcug.ca, and we'll be more than happy to add your material to the next presentation file. So that's it for me. I hope everybody, apart from being Murphy's Law, I hope everybody enjoyed the content, and hopefully we'll see you all next week. Thanks. Bye for now.
Thanks, everybody.